How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We are here every day, Monday through Friday, noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, Sundays, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern. Tons of news to talk about here today. We're here for 2 full hours. Obviously, later on today, the WWE is running their Battleground pay-per-view, and we got a bunch of lineup. We got the full lineup for this show. Bunch of matches. 8 matches in total, in fact. The WWE Championship match, Jinder Mahal defending the title against Randy Orton. We've got a tag team title match, Usos versus The New Day. We got a flag match, Fatal 5-Way, all sorts of matches here on this show. Yes, the Punjabi Prison is closing the show here today. So we're going to talk about all of the matches here on this show, give you our predictions, and take your calls on the show as well. We've also got coming up next weekend, I guess this coming weekend, it is the big Daniel Cormier-John Jones fight, if you've got thoughts on that. They did a satellite interview last night that they aired on the UFC show. What did you think about it if you saw the UFC on Fox show? Which apparently not a lot of people did based on the overnight ratings for that show. The lowest overnight ratings in the history of UFC on Fox for last night's show. But if you saw it, what did you think? I was not blown away by it. I know that some people thought it was great, other people did not. If you have thoughts on it, you're welcome to call us about that. Johnny Mundo is going to be in a movie. We got Alberto El Patron, an update on his issues with Paige that have gone public. We'll talk about that here today. Plus Kurt Angle and his son Jason Jordan, fallout from that. Kurt Angle did an interview talking about it. We can discuss that on the show here today as well. If you want to give us a call, the phone number 844-411-5411. That is toll free, 844-411-5411. You can send your text messages to 425-780-7566, and we will be right back to kick it off. Wrestling Observer Live. We're back here on the show. Brian Alvarez here, Wrestling Observer Live. We are joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for 2 hours here today. Lots of stuff to talk about, including this pay-per-view today. I guess they still consider them pay-per-views.
Special event.
It's a special event, all right. It is the WWE Battleground Show. We're going to go over all of the matches. Phone numbers, by the way, today, if you want to give us a call, 844-411-5411. The text message line, 425-780-7566. All of these numbers on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com. If you give us a call and you cannot get through, just keep trying, and eventually it'll be your lucky day, and you will be on the air. We got callers on the line now. But first off, main event of the show today remains Jinder Mahal versus Randy Orton in a Punjabi prison match for the WWE Championship. And I'll just flat out say it. I think Jinder Mahal is winning. I think Jinder Mahal is winning. I think he's going on to SummerSlam. Quite frankly, I think he's winning at SummerSlam, and I think he's going to be winning for a long, long time now. I talked about this when he first won the title. A lot of people thought it was all funny. This jobber's the champion now. Ha-ha. Let's all celebrate. I guess thinking that it would be a short-term deal and somebody would beat him. Well, we're going months now, and I think we're going to go many months to come. Anything can happen. They could change their mind today. But I do believe that Jinder is retaining the title, and I think that whoever he faces at SummerSlam will be determined by the John Cena-Rusev match and the AJ Styles-Kevin Owens match, because there are a lot of matches that have been teased on television. Shinsuke Nakamura and John Cena has been teased. I'm sorry, AJ Styles and John Cena, and Shinsuke Nakamura and AJ Styles. And I believe that if John Cena beats Rusev and Jinder Mahal beats Randy Orton, then I think we'll have John Cena, Jinder Mahal at SummerSlam, and I think we'll have AJ Styles, Shinsuke Nakamura at SummerSlam. Although, interestingly enough, for those of you that believe the odds makers know what they're talking about here, Kevin Owens is the favorite in that AJ Styles match, which I think would be a big mistake because they've got so many ready-made matches with Styles, I don't know why you would take the belt off him. Mike, your thoughts on all three of these matches?
Well, what if you wanted to do AJ Styles and Jinder Mahal then at SummerSlam, and then do maybe John Cena and Kevin Owens again, where John Cena can actually even up his win total against Kevin Owens if he wanted to go that direction and then hold
off. Kevin Owens
on
would be the champion, so that would mean that John Cena would have to become the U.S. champion, and he's not really a regular.
Sure, why not?
Well, because he's not a regular and he's a free agent.
Doesn't matter. He can still show up on TV. Just because he's at house shows doesn't mean, you know, anything. He can show up on the with the U.S. title on Raw. Look at the way John Cena shakes things up. That's why we love John Cena. Or whatever excuse they want to come up with. I tend to think in your direction that that's the way they're going to go. And I think with the matches that you said, AJ Styles and Nakamura and Jinder Mahal and John Cena, they are very SummerSlam matches. And you want to try to keep this Jinder Mahal thing going if you're WWE. It's not like it's sinking the company or anything like that. They have enough stuff over there where, you know, we may look back and we're probably going to laugh about this because it's not going to work out from a business point of view. I don't believe the way they wanted to in India. And it's, you know, creatively, it is what it is. I mean, it's great for Jinder Mahal. I mean, it's still better than anything else he's ever been involved with. So you can't really, you know, bash the guy there. And he is making, you know, it's small progress, but I believe he is making, you know, some progress there. So, you know, no big deal if he, you know, goes on and continues on with the belt. And a big win over John Cena at SummerSlam. Again, it may only be superficial, but still, I mean, it does would matter technically in the history books and be somewhat of a feather in his cap.
Let's go to the phones. You're on the air. What is going on?
This is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland. I have a question about Adam Cole, who I saw last night wrestle. He lost the Super Indy title to John McChesney, I believe his name was.
John McChesney,
you know,
yes.
He only had use of one arm.
Yeah.
And also, Britt Baker lost her title to Lufisto. So
uh-oh.
This is the first time that a girlfriend and a boyfriend have lost their titles in separate matches.
Hmm. On the same show?
Hmm.
Right.
Were they both on the same show?
Yes, they were.
They were both there last night. For some reason, I think it's impossible that this would be the first time that's ever happened before, but it would certainly be rare. So what's your conspiracy that you're intertwining into this?
Oh, huh. Probably Adam Cole is now bound to WWE since that Super Indy title
That's
away from WWE because he had to defend that title.
Right.
Are you going to conspire that Britt Baker is also on her way to WWE now, too? That's why she dropped her title? Because she didn't have to drop her title.
I like the idea here. Thank you very much for the call, Ryan. I like the idea that he couldn't go to WWE because he was the Super Indy champion.
Well,
it was binding him, he said.
Yes.
So until he lost that title, there's no way that he could ever go to WWE. He was bound to the indie scene by that IWC title or whatever it was.
You gotta dot your I's and cross your T's and make sure all that stuff is taken care of.
I need to hear more about this binding contract that these super indie titles hold on a guy. So also on the show,
he did wrestle for the the International Wrestling Cartel. So maybe they are a cartel of multiple means, and he was truly bound to this organization.
Also on the show here tonight, we have got the Usos and the New Day for the WWE SmackDown Tag Team titles. New Day's been here for a while. They're coming off a run on Raw where they were the longest running tag team champions of all time. I mean, at some point, I'm sure that the New Day is going to win the titles. Will it be here? Will it be at SummerSlam? I don't know. Guess we'll find out tonight. Don't really have any prediction on that particular match because, quite frankly, it doesn't matter who the tag team champions are. Doesn't matter, in a lot of cases, who's got what here on this show. But I do think that AJ Styles should be the U.S. champion. Kevin Owens had his run, and he can win it again later on. But there is business to attend to with AJ Styles and Shinsuke Nakamura and AJ Styles and John Cena. Now, speaking of Nakamura, he's facing Baron Corbin. Now, I know people get upset about the odds, but listen, there is no spoiler until the show is over. And in fact, on the last pay-per-view, the odds were not 100%. Now, right now, the odds are favoring Baron Corbin over Shinsuke Nakamura. I mean, if they're having a feud, listen, if Baron Corbin's beaten Shinsuke Nakamura, then that pretty much puts a damper on my Shinsuke Nakamura AJ Styles plan for SummerSlam. Mm. Especially if AJ retains the title, why would Shinsuke Nakamura get a title shot coming off a loss to Baron Corbin?
50-50, bro.
No, it's stupid. You hear me? It's stupid. But I'm not going to complain about it because nothing's happened yet. But if AJ Styles wins and Nakamura loses, and it's AJ Nakamura at SummerSlam, that's going to be stupid. And I want to see that match. Now, if John Cena wins and AJ wins and they wrestle for the title at SummerSlam, that makes sense. Why I'm putting so much thought into this, I have no idea.
I was going to say, you're putting way more thought into this than possibly they are. Although, by that latter example that you gave, that way, if you're going with AJ and Cena, that opens up the door for Nakamura and Rusev for, you know, call it the loser's bracket. But I think we'd all be winners there if they decided to go in that direction. And Baron Corbin getting a win tonight, you know, I would have Nakamura win, obviously, if he's going on to face AJ Styles, because, I mean, realistically, it doesn't hurt Baron's chances with the briefcase. I mean, he's still got that. So at the end of the day, he can still brag and be a heel about doing it that way. But, you know, I don't know. I think that's probably the direction you'd go right there. And then, you know, that's it. And you are putting it way, way too much thought into this.
No, I'm not. This is very important. SummerSlam's the second biggest show of the year.
No, it used to be.
This should all... No, it is, actually. It's now the...
No, well, technically it is. But, I mean, for a viewer at home, right now, the way things are, I mean, they all kind of run together.
Are you kidding me?
I mean, even with
Battleground and SummerSlam are running together for you? Backlash
honestly,
and SummerSlam?
Because of the way the TV is and the amount of TV. Yeah, no. In a way, actually, they do. To me, the Royal Rumble and WrestleMania are still the two that stand out. And yes, SummerSlam is more special. I'm not going to deny that. But I mean,
okay, if you want to argue
what we're talking about going into this.
If you want to argue that SummerSlam and Royal Rumble maybe are neck and neck for number two, that's fine. But that it runs together
well, no,
with
Royal
any other
Rumble
show.
Is number two. Absolutely, it's number two.
Well, it's not supposed to be. SummerSlam's supposed to be the clear two. That's their idea now. Man, we got all these days
I think
in New York City.
Yes, from a business point of view, absolutely. And look, I think they should do that for at least four pay-per-views. The four big ones are, you know, schedule weekends around them where you could build events and all that sort of stuff. I'm absolutely for that. But Royal Rumble by far outdistances SummerSlam.
All right, back in a moment with more Wrestling Observer Live. We're back here on the show. Brian Alvarez here, Wrestling Observer Live. Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Let's have Mike ask me a question, apparently.
Yeah.
Why don't you just ask me the question instead of texting me that you're going to ask me a question?
Well, because you stumble away during the break to go drink or whatever it is you do when you get away from the microphone when the commercials are on. So I wasn't sure if you were actually sitting there or not. But look, and this, I don't mean this to be a trolling question or anything like that, but this year, with what we're talking about for the possibilities for SummerSlam here, and take away the fact that it is SummerSlam and there is an aura around it and a weekend built around it. I mean, I'm not going to deny that or anything like that. Sure, it's obviously a step above Battleground and all that stuff. It's a dual brand show. But realistically, with what we have on Raw and what we're talking about on SmackDown, what could come from this show and lead to that, realistically, with the exception of Brock, and the possibilities that could come out of, and we'll see what happens there, the possibilities that could come out of that match and the matches possible there. What's so special about SummerSlam this year? And I'm not saying it's equal to Battleground or anything like that, but let's not act like it's anything super special. And I know we had a lot of time to lead up to it, but on paper, it's like, how is this really any different than any other show that would have both brands together?
Listen, first off, we don't even know what's on SummerSlam. We have no idea.
No, but we're opining about possibilities
I know,
from SmackDown being on there.
But we'll see what happens. Then we can decide whether... All I'm saying is it's supposed to be the number two show. Now listen, I'll answer your question with some stats. Okay? SummerSlam 2015.
Mm-hmm.
Top matches. We had Seth Rollins, John Cena in a title for title match in which Seth won both of the titles.
Yes.
We had Undertaker versus Brock Lesnar as the main event of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Dean Ambrose, Roman Reigns versus the Wyatt family, which, by the way, all this talk about a Shield reunion, it happened right there 2 years ago. But anyway, that was SummerSlam 2015. Royal Rumble 2015, let's see what it had on the card. It had the Royal Rumble, which Roman Reigns won, that everybody was furious about.
Yeah, but it was still the Royal Rumble.
And we had Lesnar, Rollins, and Cena. That's it.
That was pretty great.
I mean, it was a great match, but...
That was a match of the year candidate right there, and you have the Rumble. I'm just saying.
Well, let's look at last year's. Last year's SummerSlam.
Go ahead.
We had that Brock Lesnar-Randy Orton match where Lesnar nearly killed the guy. The Finn Balor-Seth Rollins match for the very first WWE Universal Championship. And AJ Styles-John Cena, which was arguably as good or better than the three-way at Royal Rumble that previous year.
I'll give you Styles Cena.
And Royal Rumble last year, we had the Royal Rumble won by Triple H. And that is it.
That's the Royal Rumble still.
Nothing else on the show.
Well, look, there were enough people that didn't like the main event of SummerSlam with Brock. And look, I can give you AJ Styles and John Cena for that one, but how much more can you possibly get? And again, the Royal Rumble, look, still, I still think there's more anticipation for the Royal Rumble every year, and it means more because of what you're going into than SummerSlam, even though, again, SummerSlam is the, I'm not going to deny it being a big event or anything like that, but as we're talking about the matches on paper, there doesn't seem to be a lot of excitement, at least to me yet, you know, other than Brock.
Don't make me start a poll.
Oh, no. God.
Let's go to the phones. You're on the air. What's up?
Hey, this is Kenny in Augusta, Georgia. And, Mike, you know, it is the biggest party of the summer.
It is. It's the biggest party of the summer.
It's like a summer fest.
No one says, hey, it's the biggest party of January.
That's because everybody's getting ready for the Super Bowl. That's sports, Brian.
Go ahead, caller. I've muted Mike.
Anyways, hey, I just recently started watching New Japan, and the two Omega Okada matches are kind of what got me signed up. So I've been watching the G1, and I think my favorite match so far is Ibushi and Naito from Night 1, but Tanahashi and Nagata was really great last night.
Well, let's see. I've watched everything. I haven't seen today's show, and I have not seen four of the matches from the night before, but I did see the Okada... Let's see, it was Okada and Elgin, I think, was the main event of Night 4. And I think that was my favorite match of all of the matches so far.
That's all you've seen?
That was a great match.
What are you talking about? I've seen the first three nights and the main event of Night 4. Have you seen any of these yet, Mike?
I'm actually seven matches behind. I didn't see last night. And
exactly.
I didn't see the first two matches on the show from the 22nd. But I did see, you know, Okada and Elgin was great. And that's a match that anybody who's got New Japan World should go out of their way to see. But the lead up and payoff to Omega and Tama Tonga, the match was good. But the story leading into that and the story that will be continued out of this, which is Tama Tonga's ascension. And, oh, yeah, remember, there's a Wolfpack faction and a black and white faction to the Bullet Club when it comes to having the Elite around is probably something that is a story that they're at least keeping lukewarm for right now moving forward.
I will go over my thoughts on every single G1 match before the show is over. You guys got that? Every single one that I have seen, I will give my thoughts on.
What about Zack Sabre Jr. matches? You going to talk about them?
Every single one.
Can't wait.
This person says, so Mike is telling me that I could have planned a trip months ahead to Battleground or Payback instead of SummerSlam, and it would have been the same. I'm more excited for TakeOver, but still, come on, Mike. That's from Mario.
It all depends on what you like. I'm just saying this year, again, this is just coming to the wrestling matches. Again, look, if you want to schedule an event around SummerSlam, I love the idea of the convention weekend. I really do, and I think they should add it for Survivor Series. And I think they need to put more effort behind Survivor Series as well, too, but that's a completely separate issue. As far as going to the event and the weekend, I'm not... nothing against that. I'm just thinking on paper, again, if everything came down to equal and I'm looking at the matches that we're talking about for, you know, SummerSlam, if you take Brock out of the mix, I don't see how really any of this is any special. And at least when it comes to the Royal Rumble, you have the Royal Rumble match. I know Roman Reigns wins it every year, or at least that's what it feels like, but you have the Royal Rumble match.
This person here says, Goldberg will be the mystery partner for Dean and Seth at SummerSlam against The Miz and The Miztourage. Watch. Listen, let me tell you something, buddy. I'd make a monetary bet on that. Because you got to realize, Goldberg, you know how much money Goldberg was paid for all of those matches when he came back? I mean, I don't know this for sure, but if someone told me it was $1 million per match, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me one bit. He was paid like crazy for those matches. So the idea that they're going to bring him back as a mystery partner in a six-man tag at SummerSlam, I mean, there's no way. They've cut pyro, for crying out loud. That's the kind of corners they're cutting on spending money right now. Are they going to pay the guy all that money? Even if it were $500,000, they're going to pay the guy $500,000 to come back to be a mystery opponent in a six-man? There's no way.
And he killed himself. I mean, he killed himself.
Well, I think his point is it's a six-man, so he wouldn't kill himself. He'd probably have to do one spear and jackhammer, and that'd be it.
Yeah, still. But again, the monetary cost of that and the fact that you can get... I mean, it's not like there's
a million guy shows up for free?
Well, that's it. But still, there's not a million and one guys you can't get to actually fill that position as a big surprise for the night.
Sky is not currently under contract, like, to do matches. I mean, he does not owe the company any matches. He will do a match again if they meet his price. And it is going to be substantial.
How about there you go. There's a Royal Rumble or a SummerSlam or a WrestleMania match, but it would be a solo one if it was SummerSlam.
Let's go to the phones. You're on the air. What's up?
Hey, Brian. Hey, Mike.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
I hear you. What's up?
Oh, cool. I'm just wondering, what if the worst-case scenario happens during the 2019 TV contract negotiations for WWE, what would be the immediate aftermath, or what would be, like, how badly would WWE be affected by it if they got, let's say, a really bad deal compared to the one they just signed?
There would be more corner cutting.
Well, I mean, the worst case scenario is they wouldn't have TV at all, but I don't think that's going to happen.
No. But yeah, I mean, as far as a really bad deal goes, it immediately affects the stock price, you know, and the confidence in the company. And there are things that spiral off of that. It's not like WWE goes out of business or anything like that. They just might have to go back with their tail between their legs, really, to NBC Universal. I mean, they are still the front runners for the property. They will basically bid against themselves unless we'll have to see what happens again with the new Paramount Network and Fox Sports. Sports One, but really initially the big thing will be the stock price and any monetary hit they get from there. But creatively, if they're rolling at the time, I mean, what can you really say? They have so much money in the coffers, it's not like they're going out of business anytime soon.
Well, hold on a second. There's more to this story. So first off, he's not even talking about bidding. He's saying, let's say there's one person interested or one network, and they offer them
half. That was
his
last deal.
Half of what they're making right now.
That won't happen.
It could. Anything can happen, dude.
You're talking then. Now, if it's that, look, the same deal, if it's the same deal, the stock price will take a hit and it will look like an unbelievable failure.
You're right. But he said worst case scenario. So I'm saying they make half.
Well, that's drastic.
Okay, well, let me answer this. I'll answer it after the break because I hear the music.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to tell you how bad this would be. Back in a moment, Wrestling Observer Live. We're back here on the show. Brian Alvarez here, Wrestling Observer Live. Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. This whole thing with WWE and their TV deal. Oh, don't worry about ratings, everybody. It's fine. Just enjoy the show. It'll be around forever. Well, let's say that they get half the money. Let's say they get the same amount. Let's say they get a little bit less. Let's say whatever. So, there was a day where, yeah, they had a tremendous amount of cash on hand. That day is not here anymore. They have blown through their cash on hand, paying out their dividend every single quarter. And do you know how many times they've made enough profit to cover that dividend? It's exceedingly rare. They have been burning through their cash on hand for years and years and years now. And then, for whatever reason, and feel free to speculate all you want, for whatever reason, they have done something similar to what UFC did at one point. They have taken out hundreds of million dollars in loans. They took out a gigantic loan. So this loan has to be paid back. So what they're in a situation right now with their current deal where they're not making enough profit to cover their dividend, and they've got loan payments that they have to make. So if they don't get a better deal than they have right now, I mean, the company's not going out of business, but they would be in, I mean... You want to talk about no pyro? I mean, you may see shows without a ring.
Let's not go that far, for God's sake.
They'd be hiring a lot fewer people. There'd be a lot more people getting cut. Those of you that cry, why do you care about ratings? Just enjoy the show. Some of your favorites you won't see anymore because they'll be fired. because they won't be able to afford the size of the roster that they have right now. There would be serious downsizing, or maybe they would even have to sell. So, point of all of this is, like, if you're thinking, well, there's nothing to worry about, all these people are watching on social media, what's the big deal? Well, hang out, and let's find out what happens in 2019. I'm not saying it's the end of the world. I'm not saying the sky is falling. I'm not saying anything. They may make more money than they're making now. I don't know. But I do know that this is not like, well, you know, we could take a big hit and everything's going to be fine. There would be some drastic major changes if they took a big hit on their TV money, their rights fees.
Yeah, but I think that they would have to lose favor with some of the people that they've worked for with for a long time at NBC Universal. And, you know, to that.
Why?
Are you kidding me?
No, because I mean, listen, hold on.
The reason they got the deal the last time was purely due to relationship.
And I know, but
frankly, that was a great deal, but they had hyped it up in everybody's mind to increase and blow up that stock price so
and
much.
And they didn't get it.
And they didn't get it, and they did take a beating. Now, it did fall, but it fell from, like, I think it was at, like, 25, it fell to 18. The stock is still around 20 now. Look, I'm not saying that them getting the same money, look, if they get the same money, they should frankly be ecstatic, but the fact of the matter is it is going to damage the stock price, but I think thoughts of them, like, getting reduced in half or something like that, and look, even if that happened, they would have to take hits universally across the world, too, and I'm not saying it's not going to do damage, but they could do cost-cutting. They could change the way that they pay out the dividend. There's other things that they could do where, yes, it would do major damage. But I think to say it's going to get cut in half, I think is very, very dramatic.
It's not getting cut in half. But my point is, it doesn't matter who they have relationships with. I mean,
yes, it does.
Well, no, listen. NBC Universal does not have unlimited money. And when they signed this deal, this last deal, they signed them to an escalating deal. So, to put it in simple terms, the first year, they got $10. The second year, they got $15. The third year, they got $20. Okay? However, the first year, their rating was a 5. The second year, their rating was a 4. And the third year, their rating was a 3. So, they were paying $10 for a 5, $15 for a 4. Now, they're paying $20 for a 3.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea that they're going to come back and say, hey, we're going to give you an escalating deal. We're going to pay you more money every year starting in 2019, knowing that the last time we did this, your ratings fell off a cliff. I mean, it doesn't matter how much NBC Universal has. I mean, they could take one look at him and go, dude, it ain't worth it right now. We're going to pay you $5 for 3 straight years, and then we'll renegotiate and see what happens.
You know, you talked about, I forget what show it was, you were talking about WCW and what happens when one man can walk in and pull the plug. And you talked about Jamie Kellner doing that with AOL Time Warner because he hated wrestling. Bonnie Hammer has had a relationship with WWE that basically is the only reason that they got the deal with the last time, because WWE led a lot of people to believe that a lot of interested parties were there bidding for them, when in reality it was NBC Universal bidding against itself. Again, I'm not saying that NBC Universal's got unlimited money to throw WWE's direction, but the fact of the matter is, those two shows still technically are two of the highest rated shows on cable television. They added the third hour, which WWE has at least to hold against NBC Universal to go, look, you killed us with this. I know you paid us extra money for this. And yes, look, anything that they get either even or less than the deal that they got, and I don't think they're going to get less. I think it's going to be even or slightly more, but that's also not going to make stock, you know, people very happy either. You know, they should probably be happy with that, but I think fantasy booking worst case scenarios for WWE on this TV deal, you know, it's a very interesting case. It's great to banter about. It's great to have speculation over who can get involved and how serious they could be. But I think, you know, when you start looking at doomsday things, I think it's a little much.
No one's saying half. He asked worst case scenario.
You brought up half.
He said worst case scenario.
And then you said, well, what if it's half?
Yeah, I mean, that'd be a worst case scenario. The worst case scenario would be zero. So
zero.
If we're going to do
and
any
and
sort of argument,
at least they have a network
half.
Then in that case.
Oh, get out of here. Let's go to the phones. You're on the air. What's going on?
So silly with you.
Hello. Going once.
Your bad banter scared
going
them off
twice.
The line.
To the phones. You're on the air. What's going on?
What's up, Brian and Mike?
Hey.
Chris from Nacogdoches.
What's happening?
What are you dealing with?
Man, it's with heavy heart I call in today and lament the untimely and tragic loss of Daryl.
Yeah, I've heard all about Daryl today.
R.I.P. Daryl.
Oh, yes. It's bad. But on to a brighter note, the G1's been great so far, I have to say.
It has been great.
Yes, and where do you think this Tamatonga and the Omega deal is going? Do you think it's going with a split, with the Elite splitting off with the Bullet Club? I don't know if I personally don't see that happen. Go ahead, sorry.
No, so I think it's going on the back burner. I think they just wanted you to remind, because it's been a while since they did a little bit of a tease like that of between the groups. So I think it's going to go on the back burner for now, as possibly Tonga continues to ascend and you start seeing more New Japan guys. You know, the guys who are New Japan loyalists are going to be Bullet Club because that's theirs. And the Young Bucks, Omega, and others will be more Elite.
First night, we had Yoshihashi, Yuji Nagata. I thought this was a solid opening match. Bad Luck Fale and Togi Makabe. I thought the match was fine. I thought the finish was good, where Makabe tried a King Kong knee drop. Fale caught him by the throat like Kane and then hit the grenade for the pin. I thought that was pretty good. We had Ishii and Goto, which I thought was a great match. They absolutely killed each other there at the end. Goto hit a huge lariat. Ishii kicked out at one, headbutt, bunch of strikes. Goto's bleeding from the mouth, and then he hits a huge kick. GTR gets the win. That match was great. So I would call that the first grade match of the G1. We talked about Sabre and Tanahashi a million times. I thought it was absolutely great until the finish, which I thought was preposterous. But hey, he twisted his arm. So I guess that means it deserves a thumb up. Even though I gave the match a thumbs up, I gave the finish a thumbs down. And Naito and Kota Ibushi was awesome. However, not the match of the year. I believe we talked about this day a couple of days ago here on the program.
Mm-hmm.
But if you get a chance,
Chris off for that?
I believe that night one is free on New Japan World. So if you want to see some really great wrestling, especially that Naito Ibushi match, I think you should go up and check that night out.
It's a great night. Now, all the nights have actually been pretty damn great, to be honest with you.
Night two, we had Juice Robinson and Satoshi Kojima. I thought this match was very good. Fans loved both guys. They really wanted Kojima to win this match, though. I think they really wanted to see Kojima get some wins. They were popping for Juice, but they were way more in awe of Kojima's near falls there at the end. And he got the win. Juice won. First ever win in a G1 over a big star. Made him come across as a guy. The fans are behind him. They love seeing a guy rising up the ranks. And Juice Robinson's doing it. He's improved dramatically from when he was CJ Parker in NXT. Stole his name from Pam Anderson. Tamatonga Michael Elgin. Thought it was a fun match. They fought up top. Tonga turned power slam or a falcon arrow or something into a gun stun and got the win. Finish was great. Match was very good. Sonata Evil, I thought was a very good match as well. Sonata is, as everyone has said a million times, he is such a great athlete. He is a great worker. He's totally missing the charisma aspect of this. But you got to recall, who is the most charismatic guy in all of WWE? Why?
I thought it was a rhetorical question.
Shinsuke
there.
Nakamura.
Okay, yes.
And believe me, Shinsuke Nakamura was not always Shinsuke Nakamura.
You didn't see it.
There was a time where he was a fella, and then he figured it out.
He was a supernova, just didn't translate exactly.
He wasn't a supernova.
That's what they called him.
That was his name, but he was not a supernova.
Went to Mexico, found himself. Now he's, all these guys go to Mexico, they find themselves.
He's beyond supernova now.
Yes, he is.
The Okada-Toriyano match, this was the match where I determined...
Now here's the real artist in the world of professional wrestling, Toriyano.
I will fight this to the death. Okada is the greatest wrestler in the entire world today. Do you hear
Pretty
me?
Much.
He has had great matches. He has had Match of the Year candidates with virtually everybody. And this was not a five-star match, but you know what? This was probably a 3 3/4 star match.
Well,
with Toru Yano.
It's to push it, but
it was it was.
Hey, look, it was a really good match for Yano.
Okada,
it's a 5-star match.
Had people convinced that he was going to do a job for Toru Yano, really believed it, not fake believe it. Like they were going crazy for these near falls.
You got to credit NJ booking for that too a little bit.
You can, but you know what? It was still Okada. Like, Toru Yano is going to face everybody in the block, and I'm not sure that he's going to wrestle anybody else that the fans are going to believe he's going to beat, and this was the champion that he was facing.
Let me just jump on that and fast forward it a couple nights, too, to the Okada-Elgin match, where it's like, Michael Elgin has had some great matches. He's had great matches, obviously, with Kenny Omega in New Japan. I know he had a pretty great one with Davey Richards in Ring of Honor. I mean, this guy has had great matches over the last couple of years. He's had 4- and 5-star men, Naito. I mean, damn good matches. And it's like this match with Okada is probably top 10 of his career, in my opinion. And it's not a slight against Elgin, but it's like this match barely finds a place in the bottom half of the top 10 matches just of this year for Okada. That's the kind of year Okada's having. It's insane.
Omega Minoru Suzuki was also a great match. Kenny Omega, I believe, is the second best wrestler in the world. He is the most spectacular wrestler in the world.
Yes, he is.
But I would not say that he is the best wrestler in the world. I would still say that's Okada.
Yeah.
But that's not a slight to be the second best wrestler in the world behind only the best wrestler in the world. This match was great. Suzuki is awesome. There were a couple things at the end. I'm not sure why Omega tried to get Suzuki to do a reverse Hurricanrana.
Because.
Really didn't work, but he tried. But yeah, there you go. Back in a moment with more Wrestling Observer Live. We're back in the show. Brian Alvarez here, Wrestling Observer Live. Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Let's go right to the phones. You're on the air. What's up?
Hi, this is Ben from LA.
Yes, Ben.
I have two things. Number one, we all know that the only reason that Mahal is champion right now is for his physique. So I'm just wondering why some wrestlers like Finn Balor and Dean Ambrose, they don't work more on their physique to have a better career.
Well,
and
first off,
number two is,
well, okay, go ahead. Tell me number two.
Okay, number two. You think you will ever see Tom Lawlor, Filthy Tom, on WWE?
Well, I want to thank you very much for the call. Filthy Tom at WWE is going to be a little harder because they don't like signing anyone who's over 30. Now, if Tom goes to New Japan or TNA or pretty much anywhere else and makes a name for himself, then it's possible. I mean, they do bring people in who are over 30, but in general, if you're over 30, it's a much more difficult road. Now, Jinder's a champion because of his physique and because he's from India. So it's more India than physique. And as far as like
physique doesn't hurt.
I mean, Finn Balor's got a great physique. Finn Balor's got one of the best physiques in the entire company. He's just, he doesn't weigh 220. He weighs 180. But I mean, it's going to be very difficult for him to naturally put on any more weight than he's currently got in his frame right now. Dean Ambrose does not look like Jinder Mahal, nor does he look like
Finn.
I mean, he could probably do a little more. Although one time he did lose a bunch of weight and he just looked really skinny and sickly. So they're all doing their best. It's not all about physique. But if you've watched any WWE in the last 30 years, it's a lot about physique.
Vince.
Back in a moment with Hour 2, Wrestling Observer Live. Back here on the show, everybody. Brian Alvarez here, Wrestling Observer Live. We are joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Second hour here today. Going to fire up the WWE Network after a while as the pre-show for the WWE Battleground show is about to begin. We got 8 big matches for the show. We can talk more about that here in the second hour. I got a million text messages I got to go over. We'll talk about all of those as well. If you want to give us a call here today, the phone number 844-411-5411. That is a toll-free number, 844-411-5411. You can send your text messages to 425-780-7566. We got a lot to talk about, including a continuing preview or review. I guess we can do a preview too because it's going on for the next couple of weeks now. But more G1 matches. I've only got through, I believe, day two. Got three and four to talk about here today. I believe day five is already in the books. Haven't seen that one yet, but we could talk about the G1 matches. We could talk about upcoming UFC events. We've got a big show this weekend. John Jones, Daniel Cormier, Tyrone Woodley, Damian Maya, Cyborg, Tanya Evinger. Cyborg can finally get her featherweight title. May as well just hand it to her, as I've said many times, but I guess she's going to actually fight for it here. So we could talk about that as well. And everything else that is on your mind, it is open lines for the next hour, 844-411-5411. Once again, text messages, which we'll get into, 425-780-7566. All of these numbers are available on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com. If you want to head up there and check that out, there's tons of news up there as well. And later on tonight, only for subscribers at WrestlingObserver.com. We will have new shows, Brian and Vinny Show covering the Battleground pay-per-view. And then later on, Dave Meltzer and I up covering all of the weekend news, as well as Battleground and more. So we're going to kick off hour two after the break here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're back on the show. Brian Alvarez here, Wrestling Observer Live. Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And let's go to the phone, see what's on your mind. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. Tim in Miami. Thanks for taking the call. Before I get to my point about tonight's show, I want to both agree and disagree with something Mike said. I disagree, Mike, that SummerSlam is just another pay-per-view. It's clearly not. It's one of the big four that if you've been watching wrestling since the late 80s, early 90s, it's a major event.
Bro, I mean, this year it is.
Yeah.
You don't even know what's on the show yet.
No, I'm going to talk about what I expect to be on the show. But I was going to say, I agree with Mike that I think Royal Rumble has supplanted SummerSlam as the number two of the big four, simply because there's a measurable benefit behind winning that match.
There is.
And I really think they're missing an opportunity to create.
Hold on. Wait. What's the measurable benefit?
Main event at WrestleMania.
That didn't happen this year.
You win the Royal Rumble, you get a title shot at WrestleMania.
So Triple H got a championship match at Mania this year? I don't remember that.
It's his company, bro.
Well, in theory.
Well, yeah, in theory, but my point is this rarely happens nowadays. They change it all up on you.
That's true, but it's still the build going into it. Yes. But about tonight's show, I just wanted to say, I've been watching wrestling since 1990, and there's so little that I enjoy about today's WWE, but one of the things that I genuinely do is so rarely do we get a bad pay-per-view match. Like, we don't have to watch Godfather versus Midian or Big Boss Man versus
good
anyone.
Point.
Like, the floor is so much higher than it used to be. And especially in main event matches, and that's why I'm so down on tonight's show, between the challenges of the gimmick itself, the limitations of the performers, and a hostile Philly crowd, this Punjabi prison match has the potential to be just the most abysmal main event match we've seen in years in WWE.
Could be.
I don't know. Could be. I will say this. The underrated portion of this show has been the talk or lack thereof of the Philadelphia crowd playing their part in this show.
Listen, I know people get mad about New Japan versus WWE comparisons and that sort of thing, but let's just look at one aspect of New Japan. Who is the best wrestler in New Japan and arguably the world?
Maybe Okada.
Yeah, he's a champion.
Or Omega or Naito.
Omega's a champion as well.
That's true.
Naito's been the champion. I mean, you don't see New Japan putting the belt on Toru Yano because, like, people cheer him or he's funny.
Right.
Or Fale because he's big. Well, I mean, the thing that frustrates me most about WWE today is you've got Shinsuke Nakamura and Finn Balor and AJ Styles and Kevin Owens and John Cena. These great wrestlers, and the champion on SmackDown is Jinder Mahal. What? What's happening here? And someone made a very good point. Like, Jinder did that interview a couple of days ago, and he said, I'm going to steal the show tonight. Okay, well, first off, Jinder, you're the champion, and you're in the main event. So how can you steal the show when you're in the main event? Steal the show is an undercard term. Mm-hmm. Like, we're gonna steal the show. Like, the main event's usually like the best match, but you know what? We're gonna steal that show tonight. How is a champion talking about stealing the show? It's ridiculous. He ain't gonna steal the show from himself.
Means you're acknowledging that people think you are of mediocre or underwhelming stature when you say that you gotta.
Well, he's supposed to be the champion.
Exactly. He's supposed to exude far more confidence. And again, in the character itself, I think he has done that. Is he?
No, he hasn't. His entrance.
Well, yeah, the entrance is great.
His character, he has the same interview every single week. He can barely get through the interview without losing his voice.
That's the thing is.
They're not even good interviews.
Well, and the thing, but look, and the thing is, and I have the tiniest bit of sympathy on him because they are programming him with everything in the world to say. And it's like, if you're going to have this guy succeed, it can't be, it's already a force fed thing as it is for most people. So let him at least have some natural come out. If this is him naturally, then this is never going to work.
But hold on.
But they are writing all this stuff for him, and he's a robot, and this is all new. I mean, there's a reason that you used to win the TV title and then move up to the U.S. title and then move up because you needed that progress. They threw him into this, and
he's learning on the job. I've said this for months.
He's at least, for himself, it's a doggy paddle to keep his head above water with where he's at, and I think he's making as much progress as he can, but I can't really hammer him. Because how much can I expect out of him? I should expect more out of
the company.
He's
been in the business for over a decade.
I know, but at that point, when you throw him in there, how much can I really blame him as opposed to blaming who put him there?
But listen,
and I think that's more than anything.
These scripted interviews, okay, yes, we all know they suck. However, if you look at WWE and you look at the people that they have doing backstage interviews, like 9 out of 10 suck. And then there's Renee Young, who blows it away.
Yeah.
So the point of this is, yeah, if everybody is scripted, there is still a way to rise above that scripting. Like, it is possible.
Renee Young was a professional broadcaster, though.
It doesn't matter.
These guys are not thespians by nature.
It doesn't matter. But some of them have figured it out. Some of them can read this stuff, and they can do it in a believable manner. He's not there. He's not the best talker. He's not the best worker.
But how much can you bang on him for that?
Well, again, he's been in this business for well over a decade. So
yes.
A lot.
I know.
You
but
can go home and do promos in the mirror like I used to do when I was a kid.
Yeah, but look, you don't flip everything up overnight. And it was only 6 weeks after he was a joke, you know, with Rob Gronkowski that all of a sudden this guy is supposed to not only carry the company or the TV show, but the company and all of their business interests in India. I mean, it's kind of
it's ridiculous.
It's a bizarre thing.
To the phones, you're on the air.
This is Jim from Virginia.
Yes, Jim.
Last night in Austin, Texas, Tessa Blanchard beat Rachel Ellering for the Lady of the Ring title for Wrestle Circus.
Now, are you sure you got this right, Jim? Are we sure this time?
Yeah, I've got this. This is 100% right. I let it read through two or three times.
Okay.
And she gave her a diving code breaker, which... If I remember the code breaker that Jericho used, that's a pretty rough move right there.
You know, I want to mention something, Jim. Stay on the line here, but
okay.
Ryan sent me a text here. Mm-hmm. Speaking of people losing titles, he's talking about the whole Adam Cole thing. And basically he said, now I can't even find it. Oh, here we go. Do you think that their plan was for Cole to bring the Super Indie title into WWE? That's why I thought he had to lose it first. Ryan, are you kidding me?
The Super Indie title to be defended on Southpaw Championship Wrestling?
You think that Adam Cole had to lose the Super Indie title before he went to WWE? You don't think they could have just pulled him to WWE and he would have never defended that title again? It would have been vacated? Give me a break. Now go ahead, Jim.
Whatever you do, don't miss ROH this week.
What's on?
They had a match for the ROH, the main event, Jay White and Kushida for the ROH TV title. 5.5 stars, dude.
5.5?
It was.
Whoa.
Yes, it was awesome.
Oh, man, the scale's all messed up now.
It was awesome.
Well, I'll check that out. You guys can check it out on the Ring of Honor website as well.
All right, and this week they got a rematch I may be wrong, but I don't think I am. It's going to be Daniels and Cody Rhodes.
There you go. All right, Jim, I want to thank you very much for the call. A lot of good information out of Jim, our women's wrestling correspondent.
Bringing facts.
That's right. Very rarely wrong. All right, we got a million text messages. Literally, we just got one more than 999,000. So let's get going here. Why does New Japan not have more English-speaking New Japan stars doing commentary during matches like the Japanese commentary does? Would love to hear Kenny or Tama on commentary. Well, they could do that for the English commentators, but just kind of not what they do. Although I do see Japanese wrestlers doing commentary with the Japanese commentators, so I suppose... Listen.
They got things to do backstage, all right?
Well, it's not just that, but... I mean, if you've ever listened to, like, Kevin Kelly, Don Callis, Jim Ross, when they talk about New Japan commentary, I mean, they're not told anything. I just think that, like... I think they just... New Japan wants them to go out there and do their job, and that's it. And they're not putting a lot of thought in, let's send out this guy to talk or whatever. Back in a moment, Wrestling Observer Live. Back here on the show, Brian Alvarez here, Wrestling Observer Live. Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. You want to give us a call, 844-411-5411. Text messages, 425-780-7566. Back to the phones here in a moment. Text messages. This person says, Brian, clearly the problem in WWE was the 72-year-old producing television in 2017. He will continue to hold back the talent, push the wrong people as long as he is around, period. Well, wrong is, he doesn't always push the wrong people, but sometimes he does. And I think that this is a very good example of that.
Speaking of wacky booking or wacky booking thoughts, apparently Michael Phelps is going to race a great white shark tonight.
News to me.
Looking for odds on Battleground that are apparently bouncing around, according to some. And at five dimes, Michael Phelps is plus 600. The Shark, a heavy favorite, at minus 1,200. So Conor McGregor, a far better chance at defeating Floyd Mayweather, according to the bookmakers, than Michael Phelps and a Shark.
Just because all these weirdos are putting all their money on Conor, hoping something's going to happen. That's why the odds are so close.
It's insane to me. Big, because it's not like there's not small money being put down on this. It's like people that are willing to throw away lots and like six digits plus of money.
This person says, I think Suzuki, Naito, and Ishii Ibushi are my favorite matches so far at G1. Apparently, I got to watch that Ibushi-Ishii match. I hear that Ibushi is very good.
Well, if you like Ibushi, then yes, you will believe that.
Sports says, why in UFC is the heavyweight division more than a couple of pounds difference like in all of the others? One guy was 235, the other 245 yesterday. Hey, listen, one guy can be 206, the other guy can be 266 if it's not a title match.
Mm-hmm.
That's a 60-pound difference.
That's crazy, isn't it?
But that's the way it is with the heavyweights. Yes, there probably should be a 225-pound division, but there's not. The lower you go, the closer the individuals... basically should be in weight, I guess, is the
and
way
they
look at it.
It's funny because, like, we've had these giants, and it's the same thing in pro boxing because this has been talked about since the 80s, too, and we started seeing these, like, I think it was, was it Superman Tate? And there were guys that's like they were going to get bigger and bigger and bigger, and there was Nikolai Valuev, who was, like, 7'1", but he was still beaten by, I think, Holyfield, I think it was, and it's like... You know, we always worry about, like, Bob Sapp and Nogueira. You brought up that example. It's like there was this fear of, like, guys becoming too big, and for whatever reason, things always level themselves out, and it seems to be, you know, probably 225 is kind of the prime weight of a heavyweight, you know, but still, the guys as low as 206. I mean, if you're well-skilled and you're just that much better than that big guy, eventually you're going to win.
Person says, is it a coincidence the Battleground event turned out to be USA versus the world in every match? Are all the Americans going to win today? I don't think all the Americans are going to win today, and I think it is probably actually just a coincidence. This person says, I became profoundly sad when I realized that Shibata is not in this year's G1. How do you think he would have been booked if not for his injury? May have won! I don't know. It's impossible to say.
It's possible. Yeah, hey, look, there's a very short list of guys, and he would have been on that list. It is Omega, it's Okada, it's Naito. There's an outside shot, it's Ibushi. Some people had Suzuki as a dark horse you could throw in there possibly as well, too. But, you know, that's probably where Shibata would be fitting about now. Although, like, next year's Dome show, if you would have told me the main event is going to be Okada and Shibata, I wouldn't have fallen over shocked at all.
Person says, Okada is the best wrestler ever. It's tough when you say ever, but let me tell you something. I don't think any wrestler has ever had a better 7 months than Okada has had this year.
O'Brien,
ever.
We were kicking this around because it's like when we started doing podcasting, you know, the PPHO was 2004, I think it was. And it's like, if you were a kid that was born at the end of the Attitude Era and you're growing up now, and this is around the time, you know, you hit like 14, 15, 16, and you're expanding, you know, your wrestling horizon expands and you have access to this stuff and you seek it out a lot more and you make it a priority and you get a chance to see New Japan. I can see how a lot of people around this age believe that Okada is the best wrestler of their generation or are saying he's the best wrestler I've ever seen. And, you know, you could debate that with Tanahashi and Nakamura, you know, and a million and one other guys of the last couple of years. But it's not like I could actively argue against anybody who's coming up in this era and believing that.
Let's go to the phones. You're on the air. What's going on?
Hey, Brian. Hey, Mike. It's John from Arkansas.
Hi, John.
I have to agree with you. Hey. I have to agree with a lot of people on the summation of Okada, but I was going to go to a topic. You know, the big thing with WWE, I think one of their big albatrosses in losing.
Hey, where'd you go?
Have been.
He blew himself out.
Get in close to the phone, buddy. What happened?
Can you hear me?
There we go.
Can you hear me?
That's better.
Okay, I was going to say that I agree with the Okada thing, I think one of the biggest deals with WWE's money issue is the whole taking the company public, I think, was a bad idea. And I also think that films division has just been this monster albatross. They wouldn't have to cut so much money and cut all these corners if they would wisely spend the money and wouldn't do foolish things out of vanity.
It
boggles my mind.
Hold on, John. First off, I want to thank you very much for the call. We got a lot of people calling in here today, but the film division is not doing that badly now. In fact, the way that they've realigned, whatever, they're investing in films. They're actually making some money on WWE films.
And can I be just throw this in there, and this may be more of a Mookie Ghana thing. Wasn't the films division, even though it hemorrhaged money, didn't they actually use that and establish that as a loss leader to balance out like some tax issues as well?
Well, they still lost money.
Well, that's
it's
true.
It's like people go, hey, can't you write off all these WWE pay-per-views? Yeah, I save a few bucks on my taxes. I got to pay for the things.
Yeah, I know free. That, but I mean, it balanced out a little bit better, I think, somewhat than people think. It wasn't like the world or like the
XFL.
No,
they weren't losing tens of millions of dollars or anything like that on a quarterly basis. But, and the other thing, as far as like going public, I mean, going public was the best thing that ever happened to them in terms of, I mean, they went from a company that made millions to a company that was worth $1 billion.
Yeah, you can argue that they screwed up their dividend and they were too loyal because one of the only selling points WWE has, and let's be real about this, is the amount of money you pay off for a dividend because, I mean, that you can't even get advertisers, you know, on your own for your property and you've been around forever and you're the industry leader and you still have trouble with that, for God's sake. So what do you have to sell? Well, you have a dividend and a really nice cash paying dividend to sell, and that's what they've been selling. And like Brian mentioned, they took out loans to pay for this because it's been one of their sterling things that they've had, but it's also caused them some damage that way because they're paying out this dividend. And it's not like it's the only thing in the world that's caused them damage or anything like that, but I would wonder in hindsight if maybe some of that mentality would have changed a little bit, kind of knowing what we know now.
To the phones, you're on the air. What's going on?
Oh, hey, this is Paul, normally in Bubbasville, on vacation in Myrtle Beach.
Yes.
And, on Friday, I've been on this string of prognostications lately.
Paul, your phone is terrible. Your phone is terrible. Get in very close to it.
Okay.
There we go.
I jokingly suggested that on Raw they might do an angle where Alexa Bliss would rip up the doll that was presented to Bayley at Comic-Con. And the next day, Bad Luck Fale destroyed Hiromu Takahashi's doll.
So you're taking credit for a correct prediction, even though it was on the other side of the world in another company involving males and not females.
NJ knows Paul.
Well, I'm thinking Bad Luck Fale may be listening to your show.
He should be.
Yeah.
It's the most listened to pro wrestling and mixed martial arts radio show in the whole world.
If you've heard Tama Tonga spit out obscenities, obviously he listens to the B&V show.
How dare you? Well, look, you've changed the world, Paul. I hope you're happy. Is that why you're on vacation?
Well, not really, but I was wondering something about tonight's main event.
It sounded like it was a forced vacation right there.
Yeah. All right, what's your question?
Right. Well, I was wondering, there's another possibility to the finish of this Punjabi prison match. Do you remember in TNA when they had that wacky domed cage match and Homicide got stuck?
Yes.
Yes, I do.
The Ultimate X thing, yeah.
You're saying Randy gets impaled and he can't get out?
Well, I'm just thinking that it's possible that Jinder Mahal might botch the finish of this, and they might not have a backup plan.
Well, they better have a backup plan. They better have. He's got two buddies. Hold on, he's got two buddies that can help him out if he gets stuck. He's got the Singh brothers. So that's always a possibility. I want to thank you very much for the call there, Paul.
You know what I'm most looking forward to on this show? The brand new tag team of Luke Harper and Zack Ryder, the new Vicious and Delicious.
Get out of here.
As they're found to have attacked Fandango and Tyler Breeze, because who else is left?
I told you a long time ago, it's Luke Harper and the Vintner, and nobody wanted to believe me.
I like Vicious and Delicious better.
Now, we're going to head to a break in a moment, but this person says, speaking of special events, was night 3 of the G1 as awesome as Dave is saying on Twitter? Haven't had a chance to watch it yet. Well, we'll get my unbiased opinion here of night 3 when we come back from the break. And then I'll talk about the main event of night 4, because that's as far as I've gotten so far.
I'm going to argue that, too.
There's a show every single night. You're going to argue that there's a main event on night 4? Because you'll lose that argument.
No, day 2 is awesome. Better than day 3, I think.
Think day 2 is better than 3?
Yeah.
All right, well, we'll talk about that after the break. If you want to send a text message, 425-780-7566. That is 425-780-7566. We will get into a lot of these after the break. So stick around, everybody. Back in a moment here on Wrestling Observer Live. Back here on the show, Brian Alvarez here, Wrestling Observer Live. Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. For the latest news and information in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, you should always check out WrestlingObserver.com. Daily updates, updates throughout the day, all of the latest news, the biggest stories in pro wrestling, as well as radio shows. If you love this show and you only hear us one time a week, you're missing out every single day. We do at least 2 and often in 3 shows. Today is a 3-show day, 2 hours of Wrestling Observer Live. Commercial free for subscribers, by the way, at WrestlingObserver.com. Later on tonight, the Brian and Vinny Show. We'll be talking about the Battleground pay-per-view. Dave Meltzer and I up later on talking Battleground. All of the news from the weekend as well. So that is available only for subscribers. We had a show last night with Dave as well, talking all of the news. Tomorrow we will have a new Observer Live, a new Observer Radio. The list goes on and on. Every day new shows. You also get full access to the archives. What is going on over there, Mike?
I got it on mute, and Ty Dillinger just came out, and I just the outfit gets me.
You're killing me here.
I'm sorry.
8,000 hours of audio available in the archives. Every show we've ever done dating back to 2005. So head up there and check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. We'll be doing play-by-play for the pay-per-view as well on the front page, so check that out. And then, of course, later on tonight for more. Subscribe, you will not regret it. WrestlingObserver.com. Now, before I mute Mike, we've got a question here regarding the G1 Night 2 and Night 3. Now, normally, Mike is always wrong and we disagree, but this time, he's right. Night 2 was superior, in my opinion, to Night 3. Dave loved Night 3, and God bless him, I don't know why. Now, I shouldn't say I don't know why.
Well.
But here are my unbiased, honest reviews of all of these matches. Haruki Goto and Yuji Nagata was actually a great match.
4 stars, easy. Excellent match.
Started out slow, but picked up there at the end. Thing with Nagata, it's sad that they're beating him in every single match, and it's his last G1, because he's so great. He doesn't wrestle like he's an old guy. He looks younger than Kojima, even though he's older. He's the same age as Suzuki. Place is going absolutely nuts for the guy at the end. And then he ran into the GTR and got pinned. This match was great.
Yeah, imagine having an embarrassment of riches where you can do that with Nagata and purely have him, which it's better for your company's future, where you basically purely have that man along with Manabu Nakanishi, Tenzan, and some others that are training your young lions. I mean, they are very blessed that way, but Yuji Nagata he's going to go down in the last maybe 20, 25 years or so as one of the most underrated workers out there. Him, Sugiura, there's a couple of them. They're just some of the most underrated wrestlers in the world.
Ishii and Makabe, I thought, was a good match. I mean, it was fun. They ran into each other. They pounded on each other. Ishii pinned him with a brainbuster. There was an awesome superplex where he tossed him in midair. Bunch of lariats and that sort of thing. But I don't know. I've seen them kill each other a million times. This was another one of them.
It was a really good hoss match. I'd say like my really
very good, but it was not like
3.5 stars.
Yeah, it was not a great match. I mean, it was a very good match. 3.5 stars. That's fair. Kota Ibushi and Zack Sabre Jr.
This comes down purely on what you think about Kota Ibushi and Zack Sabre Jr.
Not really. I mean, I think a lot about Zack Sabre Jr. But at the end of the day, I thought it was a good match. But I wasn't blown away by it. Like, Ibushi sold and sold and sold and sold, and Zack put him in a million different holds, and then finally he went for a triangle. Ibushi press power bombed him and pinned him. I thought it was good.
Look, good, very good. Fine. There are people that have said this is like it was so great, and it's like I don't know where that comes from, other than, and to me, you got to be such a big backer of both of those guys that you were blown away by it. I'm really surprised by that. When I'm in your camp, it was good.
Tanahashi and Bad Luck Fale, I mean, it was okay. There were a couple of good spots. Look, Fale is a great, as Dave says, and it's true, Fale is a great Bad Luck Fale. There was I think it was on, it was actually, what match was it? I think it was the Omega Suzuki match on night 3, where like all the Suzuki goon ran in, and then Fale just came out and cleared the ring and carried dudes to the back. That was awesome.
Yes, that was awesome.
That was great. But it was a very simple match. They had a couple of good spots, like Tanahashi trying a one-arm skin the cat back into the ring. The finish was great. High fly flow to the outside. They're fighting on the apron to get back in, but Tanahashi gives him a sling blade. Fale falls outside, and Tanahashi gets in. I thought it was good. I'd say it was a 3-star match, but that's what I'd say. I didn't think it was awesome.
I gave it 3.25 just because I appreciated, like, there's, you know, how do you make that story work? You know, there were ways they could have went with that, and I thought they did a really good job. Is the best job they possibly could, and Tanahashi, you know, maxed out the fact selling him the injury, yet still getting a backdoor win without it feeling cheap. It felt, you know, relatively inventive.
And the Naito Yoshihashi match I thought was very good. I don't think it was great. I thought it was very good.
Yeah.
A lot of Destino attempts, and the counter to the Destino was cool, and then the second Destino for the finish. I mean, it was very good. You cannot have a bad Naito match. You can't even have a good Naito match.
I think it went a little too long, though.
It's all very good. It was the main event, so they had to put in time. But yeah, if you compare that to night 3, I mean, night 3... we had the Goto Nagata match, which was great, and Ishii Makabe. Oh, wait, where am I? That's the first.
Wait. And before you go back a day and talk about day 2, I just want to point out about day 3 too. I think in hindsight, you could have added like 7 minutes to Goto and Nagata and taken that off the rest of that show, including the main. You still could have made the main, you know, almost as long as Goto and Nagata. But like a couple of those matches did go on too long, and I'm saying that even too about Tanahashi and Fale, considering the story they told.
We already went over night 2, but I mean, just a comparison. Robinson Kojima was really good. Tamatanga Elegant was good. Sonata Evil was very good. Mm-hmm. Okada Toriyano was like the best Toriyano match of all time. And Omega Suzuki was awesome.
Yeah.
So yeah, night two was way better than night three. Night four may have been better, but I don't know yet. All I know is the Juice Robinson match everybody's raving about. And the Okada Elgin match was awesome. Like, in some years, it probably would be match of the year. But not this year. It's not even close.
Haven't seen Evil and Juice. Like I said, I saw Suzuki and Sonata, and, you know, that was a good match for where those two are at right now and the story they're telling for the future on Sonata. And Omega and Tonga, you know, there was... I liked it. I think it was, you know, I think it was good. You know, I think the wrestling part was very good. There's, you know, in case, you know, if anybody hasn't seen it, not to spoil it too much, but there was a microphone performance. I think we touched on it earlier with the possibility of the Elite and Bullet Club. And, but, you know, the extension of the story that they were telling leading into that through the tag matches, which was Tama Tonga bucking his Bullet Club posse, you know, especially Chase Owens, and really going after Omega's knee to set it up. I thought the continuation of that story into that match, I thought, kind of, you know, helped it along.
This person says, any truth to the picture going around online showing Great Khali in town for Battleground? I have not heard that, but it'd be awesome.
Hey, why not?
Dude, it'd be awesome, but I have not heard anything about that.
You know, you want people on commentary, you want wrestlers on commentary, put Great Khali on the commentary team for India, and then give me a chance to hear that.
This person says, Ibushi has been by far the best talent in the G1. If it was any other year, his matches with Naito or earlier today with Ishii would have been match of the year worthy. I would say that he's the best athlete, and I would say that he is right up there with Okada and Omega. And honest to God, as great as the Omega Okada matches have been, I think that Omega and Ibushi could be right up there with those two when they finally have their match.
And I take Naito over Okada as my two. It's just a personal preference, although it's not like they can't be 2A and 2B or 1A, 1B with whoever you want in somebody's mind. I just think Okada is just so good right now. It's almost amazing.
This person says, smart money has come in, so if you don't want to hear the smart money, you may as well just shut the show off for the moment.
There we go.
The betting odds were in favor of Orton, but now they have swung to Jinder. Yeah. I mean, seriously, Orton wasn't going to win this match.
Well,
Natalya's now a favorite. Jinder, a very, 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 very heavy favorite. Styles is the favorite. Well, that's good. Styles should win. And Natalya, it doesn't matter because I think they're going to be doing a multiple-person match at SummerSlam anyway. And you know what? So this whole rigmarole with the Money in the Bank briefcase and Carmella and James Ellsworth and all of that stupidity, that all started because Shane McMahon signed a multiple-person match, and it all went off the rails. So this numbskull just signed another one, and so my guess is it's all going to go off the rails and Talia's going to win, but it'll still end up being a multiple-person match at SummerSlam. That's my thought.
I have a question. I know they've cut back on a lot of costs, but would you, under the circumstances, have one of those, like, have some sort of drone fly in with Shane hanging from it, and he can rappel into the middle of the ring.
What are you talking about?
To play off of his helicopter mishap this week.
Kidding me? Give me a break.
Shane is there to save the day. He and Daniel Bryan.
This person says, is it normal now in a WWE match for wrestlers to do a New Japan sell off the turnbuckle into an offense attack?
Well.
Oh, I see. Where they get thrown into the turnbuckle, but then they spring out with something?
Spring out,
That's fine. As long as they're not running full speed into the corner and then bouncing out to run the other direction, I'm fine with it.
Unless it's very early in the match. Then it's stupid. I'll accept that one. I know. Well, look, come on. Look, what is an Irish whip anyway, for God's sakes?
Mike, I've seen matches.
You ain't Irish whipping me.
I've seen matches where a guy will put a guy in a corner, he'll run as fast as he can and hit the other corner as hard as he can, and then bounce out to hit the guy again.
Well, that's
not selling anything.
I look, guys.
And then moments later, he'll be thrown into the buckle and he'll sell it.
But
that's stupid. That's mind-bogglingly stupid.
There's a lot of stupid when it comes to wrestling.
No, this is a new level of stupid.
By the way, the
buckle doesn't hurt sometimes, but not other times. It either hurts every time or it never hurts.
Speaking about the possibility of stupid, depending on how you look at this, Aiden English just defeated Ty Dillinger.
Yeah, I think, listen to me. So Ty Dillinger was a
making
guy
an egg symbol in the middle of the ring.
Who was on the main roster, or he was in developmental or whatever, and they got rid of him. And they brought him back, and he was only going to be like a good hand in developmental. But he got a gimmick that really got him over at Full Sail, and eventually they brought him up to the main roster. But at the end of the day, the guy that wrote earlier, there's a 72-year-old guy, he's still there. And so if he didn't see anything in Aiden English years ago, or not Aiden, Ty Dillinger, or Aiden English, anybody, if he didn't see anything in you years ago, it's very hard to change his mind. That's why I worry about Drew McIntyre. Like Drew McIntyre, he was fired, and he went away and became very good, came back, now he's awesome. There's no telling what will happen when he goes up to the main roster. I mean, Vince is pushing Jinder, but that's for extenuating circumstances, the India market. I mean, there's no guarantee that when Drew McIntyre gets called up, he doesn't get buried again. It's Vince McMahon. He's still running the company. It's bottom line. And a leopard does not change its spots, so I've heard. I don't know why it was rumored that they could. I don't know where that came from.
Probably you, and then change your mind on it.
English won clean in the middle.
You did?
Yep. Clean in the middle. Person says, what do you think is most likely to happen in the next year? Ronda Rousey wrestles in WWE NXT, or Ronda Rousey returns to the Octagon for another fight? I think it's more likely she does a WWE match, to be honest with you. I could be out of my mind.
Hey. Got a question for you when we get back from break.
Better be quick. Wrestling Observer Live. Back here with the final segment of the show. Mike has a question. I can hardly wait.
Don't be snippy, for heaven's sakes.
I can hardly wait.
Legitimate question. And I wonder what the odds are on this. Will either Daniel Bryan or Shane McMahon or both men show up for work tonight?
Of course not. That was your question? What a stupid question. There's no way they're going to be there.
A stupid response. So you're saying there's no chance at all? You're putting your entire reputation on this, Brian Alvarez?
No, of course not.
Your prognostication skills?
Of course not.
Or whatever that word is?
Prognostication. Of course they might be
skills.
There, but the chances are very, very slim they're going to be here at this pay-per-view. They're never here for these shows. You know this. If they're there,
well,
it's an aberration.
Brian might be because he has a baby, but maybe we're going to sell Shane in the helicopter. That's why he couldn't make it. He's out there doing something dramatic.
He's probably never flying again, so he's surely not going to be there now.
I wouldn't.
Well, everybody, I see Randy Orton sitting on top of this cage from the SmackDown angle. The Punjabi prison is about to begin. Hopefully they got cameras inside.
Punjabi.
You can't see a thing through all that wood. The Maharaja, the time has come to put Randy Orton's legacy to rest. Hashtag Punjabi prison match tonight.
Oh, talking smack after.
Randy says the match doesn't matter. The result will be the same. RKO out of nowhere. Well, you can't win with an RKO, geek. You got to climb out.
Well.
He should know this. He's going to lose. He doesn't know the rules. There you go. All right, everybody. We're out of time. But hey, we're here every day, Monday through Friday, noon Pacific, 3 Eastern. Sundays, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern. You can check out a replay daily at 5 Pacific, 8 Eastern, as well as Monday mornings. Check out sportsbyline.com for replay times. And of course, for more, you can always head to wrestlingobserver.com. Tons of members-only shows and so much more. Check it out, everybody. And that is it. We'll talk to you again next time here on Wrestling Observer Live.